One of the things that makes this
the most effective advertising campaign in the world
so effective is the use of humor. Using humor to promote a professional development program like the Master of Advertising Effectiveness might seem unusual, but in fact, humorous advertising is among the most effective advertising. Yet the use of humor has declined considerably in recent years, which is the exact opposite of funny. To learn more about what makes advertising effective, head over to mae.academy. That's mae.academy.
Hello and welcome to the Walk Podcast. My name's Lena Rowland, Head of Content for Walk Strategy, and today we're talking about performance marketing. To do that, I'm delighted to be joined by Catherine Driscoll, Walk's Commissioning Editor for EMEA, and editor of a Walk Guide on this very topic. So Catherine, tell me about why you chose to focus on performance marketing for this report.
Hi Lena, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here to share some insights from this new Walk Guide. And we've got a great collection of articles and there's contributions from companies including Meta, TikTok, Google, Fosper, Magic Numbers and many more. So the idea for this guide came from a conversation I had with Harry Davison, who's head of marketing science for Northern Europe, Middle East and Africa at Meta. And he's called out how Walk often focuses on brand building effectiveness, but not so much on best practices for performance marketing, which has, of course, seen explosive growth in recent years. This focus on performance marketing is also shown by our Walk Marketers Toolkit survey, which revealed that spend on performance marketing has increased every year since the pandemic, and that in every global region, marketers were planning to spend around half of their advertising budget on performance.
Yes, so performance marketing is really having a moment then.
It really is. I mean, of course, it's been around as a strategy for a long time with roots in direct mail. But here at Walk, we've also seen there's some interesting headwinds impacting performance marketing this year. So now felt like a good time to do a deep dive on the topic.
So before we dive in, I think it'd be really good to start with explaining how we're actually defining performance marketing for this report.
Sure. So in the guide, we define it as a type of online advertising where advertisers pay for specific results such as clicks and conversions. It tends to have a short-term sales focus, but there are changes in the performance marketing landscape that are really challenging distinctions between short and long-term marketing strategies and the media that are used for each.
So tell us more about these changes that you've covered in the report.
Absolutely. So these shifts in performance marketing are my first topic for the 3 and 15 format. Performance marketing's huge growth over many years has been a result of its appeal as a measurable targeted strategy. But more recently, the growth of AI, move away from cookie-based measurement, focus on the importance of long-term effects, and the rise of retail media are all impacting what performance marketing means today. There's really a lot going on with a focus on the full funnel, reaching a broader audience, as well as changes to measurement, and multiple media channels becoming more shoppable and addressable. And we also, in the guide, look at the issue of digital wastage and the huge carbon footprint of digital advertising.
There's tons of really great stuff in this report, but obviously this is a 3 and 15. So amongst all that, what areas come to the fore as the most significant?
So two areas that are huge topics this year are AI and retail media. Both of these have had a lot of coverage across the marketing press, but in the context of performance marketing, it's more than talk, you know, it's really significant effects. Artificial intelligence and automation are increasingly being used in the major platforms for media planning and buying, as well as part of new tools for advertisers to create and manage campaigns, and impacting search and creative. So really reaching into all areas of performance.
Interesting. So can you share an example?
Sure. So, you know, one thing you could say would be, well, Google's, you know, the hugely dominant leader when it comes to search ad spend. The integration of ChatGPT into Bing is increasing its share in the global search market. And each 1% share gained could earn the company an additional $2.5 billion in revenue.
And what about tools such as Meta's Advantage Plus?
Yeah, so tools like Advantage Plus and Google's Performance Max effectively automate part of the media planning and buying process, making it simpler for advertisers to create and manage campaigns across the Google and Meta ecosystems. And these newer systems are claimed to enable outcome-based planning, which means instead of planning against an audience, the AI optimizes against a specific tangible outcome that the advertiser wants to achieve.
That's a really interesting shift, but what about the all-important effectiveness?
Yeah, you know, so automation tools, they can enable marketers to keep pace with changes in technology. You know, it's an efficient way to manage complex campaigns. And yes, it is effective. Recent Meta research has found that using its automated products led to a 12% lower cost per attributed purchase compared to their standard conversion campaigns. And President Martin Lau of Tencent has said in, you know, marketing press that AI is contributing to more accurate ad targeting, higher ad click-through rates, and so faster advertising revenue growth rates.
And what about the publicised downsides of AI? What are the considerations there?
Yeah, marketers do need to think about the black box nature of many AI tools, which means that they can make decisions and deliver results that aren't clearly explained. And it's also important to work to clear ethical principles when dealing with AI-based tools. And the rapid progress of generative AI has the potential to create content at scale, but it also makes fighting media quality issues such as ad fraud more complex, underscoring the importance of brand safety protections.
Absolutely. So, Catherine, I just want to jump back to retail media, which you mentioned that as a significant trend.
So retail media, it's among the fastest growing advertising channels. It's forecast to reach $141.7 billion in 2024, and that's 13.6% of all ad spend. It's obviously growing hugely, and it's really relevant to performance marketing budgets, as previously retail media spend had been sort of coming from a different budget pot in most cases. But we could be moving towards an increasing share of ad spending going to retail media at the expense of other performance channels.
Yes, we know retail media offers brands a variety of advantages. They have first-party data, strong relationship with customers, privacy advantages, brand safety, detailed ROAS measures, comprehensive customer journey propositions, and effective attribution.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd also add, you know, the dynamic and algorithmic nature of retail media advertising formats, you know, really enables effective targeting and optimization too. So, you know, there's a lot of advantages for brands. You know, as a result of all this, we saw in a marketing survey by Sky that the marketing platform, not the media company, that the top driver of investment in retail media was that it has a higher perceived ROI than other channels. And interestingly, in the survey, they found 24% said that retail media advertising exceeded their performance indicators. So, you know, they thought it would do well and it actually did better. You know, these data-rich retail media networks can really help brands understand the performance of their campaigns across channels, and they're valued as a source of shopper insights across the entire customer purchase journey. So we really think this is only going to increase in importance.
Great stuff. So what's the next topic for this podcast?
So the second area I'd like to focus on is more about strategy. Many of the distinctions between short and longer term campaigns are being challenged. We've all heard a lot about the brand versus performance debate. And we share in the guide various pieces of research that show that uniting brand and performance drives better outcomes.
Yes, and we've had a few really great episodes of the Walk podcast on this topic. So I'd encourage our listeners to tune into the one by Michael Fanuel, asking, should we burn the marketing funnel? And there's also one by Jim Stengel, do we need to rethink brand versus performance?
Yes, absolutely. It's a really great insights on those episodes. While performance marketing is effective, you know, for many companies, it can be their main driver of growth as they increase budgets and optimize campaigns to convert an increasing share of the in-market audience. You know, there's also a need for performance marketers to focus on brand growth beyond immediate sales to reach potential new customers who'll buy in the longer term.
Now, in the guide, you feature research from James Herman and Tracksuit about growth efficiency. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. This was a study we published last year from Walk, James Herman, and also Tracksuit and Perpetua. And they found that scaling brand awareness as you scale performance marketing allows you to maintain growth efficiency and then so scale profitably. James Herman describes growth efficiency as marketing's existential metric. It's a measure of how much it costs to grow. It's not about how efficiently to grow sales today, but going forward into the future. The balance of performance and brand really matters depending on the stage your business is at. New research from Magic Numbers confirms performance marketing delivers a significantly stronger ROI for startups and scale-ups, but brand building delivers better results for larger, more established players. And lots more research in the guide by Magic Numbers, Meta, Fospo, and TikTok all points towards the importance of long-term measurement to capture all effects of advertising, which reflects previous work on WARC by analytic partners, which found performance marketing is more effective when combined with brand equity and cross-tactic messaging.
So what we're really talking about here is shifting to a full funnel strategy. Could you explain a bit more about what that looks like?
Yes, it's more than a change in media strategy. Full funnel optimization should be planned across all phases, informing creative strategy, media planning, and measurement. In the guide, marketing science partners from Meta share some best practices for scaling beyond a performance-only approach, which involves analysing reach potential to see how much opportunity there is to grow through performance marketing. And then the second element is a focus on creative. So messaging needs to change to resonate with a broader audience who might not be familiar with the brand or product. And then the third element is the right measurement approach to optimise across the funnel. And performance-related metrics, you know, might undervalue the impact of upper funnel activities.
So it's really a comprehensive look at strategy and quite a change in focus for some performance marketers.
Yeah, you know, it is a big change. And there's some interesting findings from FOSPA that brands, you know, who didn't spend in higher funnel initially had stronger metrics. So it's a real leap of faith. You know, their customer acquisition costs might rise as they sort of invest in upper funnel. But they found that those who maintained spending over 10 months or longer showed far lower customer acquisition costs, that she went down 35%, and they had a stronger return on ad spend. So sort of keeping with the longer performance program was really beneficial.
So all this seems to point to the fact that having the right measurement in place is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. And a focus on measurement is my third area. This measurement's changing. You know, of course, this year we've all heard about how it's becoming more privacy-centric with the changes to Google and Chrome. And at the same time, research emphasises both the short and long-term effects. So it means that many marketers are having to rethink what they're currently doing. You know, a useful guide is Google's new Modern Measurement Playbook, which is really comprehensive, and it does a good job of explaining how the changes to attribution will affect marketers. I mean, ultimately, the advice from the playbook is to use a combination of attribution, incrementality experiments, and also market mix modelling to get a holistic view of how advertising is working. I mean, of course, attribution's the one part that's most affected by the end of cookies. But in Google's view, it's reinvented itself to continue to provide real-time data by relying on modelling back to that AI to cover tracking gaps in the measurement. But on its own, it's not enough. So you also need the incrementality experiments, which are becoming more accessible and popular, and they're becoming more options to run them in platform. And thirdly, MMM, which is also having a bit of a renaissance with its increased ability to show granular results and improved frequency of updates. In the guide, Dr. Grace Kite and Charles Cleesby from Magic Numbers emphasise how it's changing and becoming sort of more accessible, less expensive, and more able to provide frequent feedback.
So we know what to do, but is there specific advice on how to implement these measures within the report?
There's lots of excellent articles on this. We've got the head of client research, Steve Lockwood, at TikTok, who calls on advertisers to reevaluate their measurement strategies and be more outcome focused. And also Snezina Kashikiva from FOSPA shares some of the difficulties that advertisers may face with current strategies and offers advice on how to optimise their results. And we have contributions on how to employ MMM from Magic Numbers, as well as Echometrics and APAC.
And you've got some good case study examples in the guide too, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the other areas, you know, is the importance of experimentation. And this is really brought to life by an article by Meta iProspect and the luxury jewellery brand Pandora. And they share detail on how to set up effective experiments, and also an inspiring case study showing how Pandora created a test and learn culture that resulted in growing incremental sales on Meta by 160%.
All right. So aside from the end of cookies, what are some of the other issues with measurement in performance marketing?
There were a few specific things that authors highlighted. I mean, both attribution and marketing mix modelling have a role to play, and they can complement each other for a fuller understanding. But, you know, over-relying on attribution, particularly last touch attribution, can really lead to short-term thinking and, you know, really poor budget allocation, as it doesn't take account of all the media touch points that related to the sale. And so in the guide, there's an interesting article by FOSPA, which found that major platforms can undervalue higher funnel activity. And they also may be limited in capturing the contribution of channels which are more to do with awareness, such as TikTok and also Pinterest. So it's important to make sure, you know, that you're really looking at all the elements and capturing all parts of the campaign. And another area that Magic Numbers highlighted is that for well-known brands, sometimes the ad's just a signpost for someone who'd find the brand in another way if it didn't exist. And so people clicking on it is actually wastage in the advertiser's budget, as the ad is not necessarily needed.
Okay, so look, we can't cover everything that's in the guide or on this podcast, but are there any other themes that you'd want to highlight before we close?
Okay, I'll try and be quick. On the topic of wastage, there's a huge issue, of course, of managing digital advertising's carbon footprint, which we look at. Other articles in the guide address specific best practices, such as a piece from Google on how to make an optimal website for sales. You know, what's the best landing page? And guidance from Ethos is really how to use performance marketing for high value products and services. So like financial services, you know, really expensive products that, you know, they're expecting low numbers of sales, which is challenging when you're looking at sort of demand signals. I'd encourage everyone to look for the guide on walk.com, and there's actually several articles that are open to non-subscribers.
There's so much great new research and case studies in this report, so I urge our clients to check it out on walk.com. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights on this important topic.
Lena, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed delving into the research.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, subscribe to The Walk Podcast on your podcasting platform of choice. Until next time, thank you for listening. Thank you.